Let's see where. I think it's an important thing is my background as a youth here in San Francisco.
It was
an entirely different atmosphere. I can't say that prejudice was rampant, but it was very much in our focus.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that we were being discriminated against, and I didn't know how to fight it. Going to public school was very good. Mixed fairly well with students there, but socially, I think it was quite a break.
Yeah.
They had the main population had their own agenda socially, we as Japanese Americans had our own social organization.
Mm-hmm.
We had our own basketball league, football as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't that opportunity to really mix. Although in schools, if you excelled in sports or in academia, you reach the top, and there's not enough competition. So there was a bound to be some mixture,
mm-hmm.
but. The Japanese Americans were by nature small and physically,
yeah,
and couldn't really compete athletically. So the idea of having their own league was not a bad one.
Yeah, but you're an exception to that. You're quite tall.
I was, yes. I was on the tall side.
Yeah.
I was six feet.
Yeah.
I think I was 6 feet when I was 14 or 15. I reached my height very quickly. So I was kind of a freak in that. Although there were quite a few, but some other Niseis. Niseis means second generation Japanese American, who were 6 feet or so. But you can count them on your fingers.
Yeah.
Academically, we were able to compete and stay up with the rest of the population.
Right. So most of the second generation spoke English very well, I'm assuming.
They did, but I think the background was still starting out. You have parents who spoke nothing but Japanese.
Yeah.
They didn't speak English. My parents were somewhat exceptional in that they went to the university system here and were able to comprehend and speak English.
Mm-hmm.
So we were kind of bilingual in that viewpoint. But the important thing was that finding employment, particularly towards the, as you approached World War II.
Yeah.
And in the late 30s, it was difficult to find a job. I couldn't. I wasn't that good a student anyway. I was not. I was a playboy when I was in college. Going to college, I misused the freedom and the responsibility that I should have assumed I did.
Right. This was your time at Cal?
At Cal, at Cal. Yeah. I had a great time. I can't say I was a playboy, but... I had access to my dad's car.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, in San Francisco, they had a way of nudging you along by skipping grades.
Yeah.
I skipped three grades. through the high school system, and that's kind of dumb to do. Got to college, I guess I could have kept up, but I wasn't emotionally mature enough to handle it.
Yeah.
And I succumbed to the temptation of easy life and playboy.
Yeah.
So I wasn't a playboy, but I wasn't that academically involved either.
I think you described it yesterday as Joe College, huh?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I went to all the football, baseball, basketball, track meets,
yeah,
swim meets, but I enjoyed it all. And saw some very good performances.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't bad, you know, you got to get out of your system early enough.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I was ready to buckle down and study, I had to. Once the war came, and much dependent on what I did academically to keep moving,
mm-hmm.
I knew that I had to perform. And that was a tough, tough period of my life.
Yeah.
From 42 through 45, 6, it was tough.
Yeah.
Those were the 3-4 years that I really buckled down. But in lieu of professional training, I did get farm training. That's the only kind of job I could find, mm-hmm. 2 bits an hour. And that's the toughest work that you can find. That's 60 to 70 hours a day, a week.
Was this in high school and on into college?
Yeah, on into college. I lied about my age, because I was big.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when I was 13, 14, I might have been out in the farms already.
Yeah.
You couldn't go until you were really 16, 17. But I lied and got to the farm. And that was a lot of work. Hot, you go out in the minute you leave San Francisco and go to Central California, it's hot.
Yeah.
Very hot. It's like a desert. Doesn't rain. But I stuck it out. I promised Mother that I'd never come home unless I was really sick. And boy, I was sick. I wanted to come home. But it got easier with the intervening years. That started maybe when I was, 14, 15,
mm-hmm.
16, 17. Anyway, it was about 3-4 summers in a row that I worked there.
Yeah.
That's what Mother kept saying. I'll never be an architect, not in this country. Because there was no way I was going to get my 3 years experience, apprenticeship period. I had to find a job in an office.
Did you ever think that you would go into business with your dad, possibly?
No.
No,
no, that was a tough job, too.
Yeah.
It was good all through the year. He's kind of loafing at home, not doing much, talking, driving around the country and talking to different farmers.
Yeah.
But harvest season, he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he'd move into wherever he'd be, packing house where he'd be. And he'd have a big payroll to mm-hmm. pack these things, deliver it, truck it around, pick it up. But it was a tough job for him, and I could see he had to work hard.
Yeah.
And I guess I was born lazy. I didn't envy any of that. Didn't have any desire to follow up on that. But I did want to become an architect. I liked to draw. I liked the idea of putting things together.
Mm-hmm.
And I would work. My first job was kind of funny. It was here locally. A guy named Russell Varsi, he was a florist,
mm-hmm.
and he had some buildings he wanted to build, housing he wants to build, and he needed drawings to get it approved and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I helped him do that. That was on my own, no other architect or anyone else professionally involved, but taking his requirements and making enough drawings to put it together. And it was crude, it was bad drawing, bad design. Everything was FHA
yeah.
housing standards.
Was this
Pardon?
What, was this after you had some training at Cal?
While I was training.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah, during the summers when I off when I had any spare time, I'd do something. I worked for the hour, worked by the hour.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was charging, 40 cents, 50 cents an hour. But that's the kind of work I was doing. But it's hardly qualifies as work experience.
Mm-hmm.
But when we went to Japan, it was interesting. We thought that, mother was here from 1919, she migrated,
mm-hmm.
married dad, and came over here in San Francisco. From 1919 to 41, that's how many years?
Mm.
41 to...
About 22 years.
Yeah, she's been in this country 22 years. Yeah. Well, that's when we went. We went in summer of 41.
Back to Japan.
Hell of a time to go, but as near adult, I had my first experience in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I was there before, when my kid sister was born in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Your youngest.
Yeah, and she was the enemy alien.
Yeah.
She was a poor girl. She went all through the war years as an enemy alien. And she was born there, and that's the only thing. Yeah, only thing that threw her back.
And then you and your brother were born here in the States.
The rest of us were born here in the States. Mm-hmm. We lived here. But she was conceived here, but went to Japan in 40. Well, that was in 1924. And that's when she was born, in 1924.
Mm-hmm.
And no sooner she was born, Exclusion Act, or whatever you call it, came into effect, and we had to get back to the States, or you couldn't get back in.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a different standard for Japanese Americans. You had to, there are certain things that were limiting, different. You had to be born to become a citizen. You could not become naturalized.
Mm.
So my kid sister, my mother, dad, born in Japan, were forever Japanese. They couldn't become American.
Yeah.
Now dad went through high school and college here. Been here since 1904, and he still could become a citizen.
Hmm. So he came over quite early, 1904.
He came at the age of 22.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that out recently. You go to these museums and they have computers that you can work to get data on your family.
Right.
And I couldn't find my dad at all in San Francisco, but finally I found him in Seattle.
Huh.
He landed in Seattle.
Yeah.
This is why I couldn't find him. But he worked himself down to the San Francisco Bay Area. But that took a lot of guts to come alone without speaking the language to a strange country and to decide to go through high school all over again.
Gosh.
And college and start out. But once you got out of college, he was very unique. He was bilingual. He could speak both Japanese and English,
mm-hmm.
and converse and read and write. So that was a plus factor. And being a farmer at heart, he knew a lot of the farmers in California.
Mm-hmm.
And he recommended crop rotation, for one.
Right.
And the logic there was that you use up the nutrients in the soil, so you have to replenish it by crop rotation and fertilizer.
Was that a fairly new concept around here?
I don't know. I guess it was a pretty accepted thing, because they did vary the produce. And I guess, you know, if you're a farmer, you like to do the same thing over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what you're going to do, what you're in for. It's easy to take inventory. But it didn't work that way. Every succeeding year, your crops come out smaller because you're using up the nutrients of the soil. Mm-hmm. So you either have to replenish the nutrients or you do it by crop rotation or by fertilizing it.
Mm-hmm.
Dad was involved with both. He sells fertilizer. And then when harvest time came, he'd buy the produce and pack it, put it in ice, and then put it into freight cars and ship it back east.
Mm-hmm.
And there he stayed up, sometimes without sleeping. You know, the train would go to Omaha, and the price isn't too good yet because so many other trains would ship the same kind of vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd keep shipping it all back east, maybe as far as Chicago or Detroit. But he had brokers out there that would handle the produce for him, selling the
mm-hmm.
produce. So that's how he made his living, and it was a good living. And we always had good fresh vegetables.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I grew so tall. I don't know. But we were lucky in that viewpoint. We did buy vegetable during harvest season. We always had access to it. And farmers would always be bringing vegetables and things over to the house. So that was Dad's living. And he had this packing house in Pismo Beach. That's halfway down to Los Angeles on the coast, near San Luis Obispo, Morro Bay, that area, Pismo Beach. They've got these big Pismo clams.
Uh-huh.
It has to be 5 inches before you can harvest it.
Oh, really? That's a big clam.
That's a big clam. Yeah. Beautiful. Awfully good eating.
Yeah.
It's good raw. It's very good raw. I remember going digging with Kent Nagano. Kent Nagano was a music director. He is no longer. I think he's leaving Berkeley. But Berkeley's Symphony Orchestra leader.
Uh-huh.
His dad, George Nagano, also studied architecture.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They farmed out there. But I remember visiting them at Pismo Beach, and we'd be out on the beach digging for the Pismo clams. And he'd be telling me how good they are raw. And that I should have tried. I'm game. I lived in Carolina long enough to eat cherry stone and little bit clams, and they're awfully good raw.
Yeah.
I never eaten it raw until I went back east. But he's telling me how good these Pismo clams are, but they're huge, five inches. They open it up and slice it, you know, to bite size, and then you put a little soy sauce and lemon on it, and it's good, awfully good eating. But he's describing it to me, and he says, "You see that guy up on the hill up there? That's the game warden. He's got binoculars, and he's watching us. So you got to watch it. But if you want to try it, get ready. Because I'm ready anytime you're. Then he digs up this clam, and the clam has his tongue stuck out.
Yeah.
Out of the shell, it's just stuck out. And it's trying to wiggle back in there. Shoves it in my face. I said, "Quick, bite it. I couldn't do it. It's like 5-6 o'clock in the morning. But later on in the during the day, the wives came out and prepared a very nice
lunch. Oh, good. Yeah.
And it was good.
Yeah.
It was very good. I don't know if you can still get Pismo clams.
I don't know.
Anyway, that's a side issue. But Dad had a packing house out there, Pismo Beach area, and then in Pescadero, and the big one was in Sacramento.
Mm.
The one in Sacramento was quite nice. It had a ride up till evacuation time after World War One, two.
Mm-hmm.
His warehouse was located right on the Sacramento River, and intersection of Main Street and the Sacramento River. You come over to Main Street Bridge, and on the right-hand side was his warehouse. You had the boat landing on one side, train siding on the other side, and trucks, and there's where the farmers brought in their produce, and they're packed and shipped back east. I don't know, maybe a carload a day.
Mm-hmm.
But that was his living. It was appealing because I liked the idea of just working harvest season, you know, 2-3 months a year. The rest of the time you can go fishing. I used to go fishing, and he always said, bring the car in the backside. We'd always bring the car in the backside and load up and get fishing rods in there and drive out to the beach.
It sounds like a good life.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, others would have to go to work, you know. So he was very, very... careful about how he maneuvered this kind of thing. But my childhood was not one of hardship.
Yeah.
We were well taken care of, fed well. And I guess getting big was nutrition as well as some heritage. My dad was on the tall side.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was 5'4", which was on the tall side for a Japanese national at that time.
Mm-hmm.
The average Nisei woman might be about 5'4" now. Mm-hmm. But the Issei woman, one that came over from Japan, they were much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Some didn't even make 5 feet.
Right. So Issei is first generation.
Issei is first.
Right.
Issei.
Well, you had quite an ordeal. You were telling me about getting back to the United States in 1941.
Well, that's when we went to Japan.
Yeah.
Mother said, you'll never make it here. And the primary reason was I couldn't find a job. I couldn't find work. Not as an apprentice. And you need, I think it was 3 years experience,
mm-hmm.
apprenticeship before you could take your state board. So we decided we'd go to Japan, take a look, see what opportunities there'd be. Mother thought it'd be ideal if I was trained here, got all the knowledge that I needed, and then go to Japan and open up an office or practice or do whatever. So we went to Japan very happily, and at that time it was structured so that my sister, older sister, my brother, and myself, we were American citizens, born here. My mother and my kid sister were Japanese nationals, they were born in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and could not become naturalized. The funny thing was, there was a law that opened up citizenship to blacks,
mm-hmm.
but didn't include the yellow race, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. We weren't included.
Huh.
So we weren't allowed to become citizens. And that's when a lot of the farmers lost their land.
Mm.
The alien land law came into effect. Mm. So farmers who bought land lost it because they were holding it illegally. They were not citizens and qualified for farm ownership. So those farmers who had children bought land in the children's name.
Right.
And then they could farm it and make a decent profit. So that's how the farmers worked their way around this kind of thing. But we got to Japan. And indeed, there was a lot of friction. uncle, my mother's brother, kept saying, no need to go back to the States, there's going to be a war.
Mm.
And indeed, there were a lot of agitation. We go out in the country, out in the boondocks, away from the big cities, and natives would form a circle around us and point out our glasses. They didn't like the gold.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the gold was taboo. Shouldn't have gold around my glasses.
Huh.
Take them off, take them off, take them off.
This was away from Tokyo.
But there was this kind of animosity from the public. I guess we were resented. We were taller than they were.
Right.
I'd always bump my head on the rafters.
Okay.
You know, actually, the houses are the oldest rafters, just to catch a head height.
Oh, gosh.
Their module is 3 feet by 6 feet.
Right.
Three by six. And that's a floor mat.
Yeah, that's a tatami.
Tatami is 3 feet by six. Hmm. And they never say a room, a house, 2,000 square feet.
That's huge.
I suppose it could be. But that might be 100 floor panels.
Hmm.
18 times 100, 1,800 square feet.
Right.
So a house that big, they always said it's a 20 panel house or.
So they wouldn't speak in terms of square feet or square meters. It was all number of panels.
Number of panels.
Right.
And that's how the room sizes are.
I see.
And that made kind of sense. Then the vertical part, the tatami mats, the panels, sliding door panels, are also 3x6.
Okay.
And they fit. So if you have 3 foot panels, floor mats, you've got five of those, you've got five outside panels.
So you're playing in section and working out the same.
There was some coordination of floor, ceiling, wall material.
Yeah.
And it comes together and wall panels, you can get sliding, fixed panels, different wood doors, glass panels. But they'll all be interchangeable in those. And that was the first real exposure to panelized construction that I ran into. And it made sense. It's, you know, like we'd go right down to the fraction of an inch to measure a room size or wall size. So you custom tailor each one, and that takes time, material, labor, money. Anyway, that was filed away. I didn't do anything with it.
Right.
But, I knew it existed that way.
Right.
I should have studied it more, because I think there's a lot more lesson I could have learned from it. We traveled quite extensively in Japan, because that's what we were there for.
And
everywhere we went, we had to report to the their equivalent to the FBI.
Oh, really?
And they said, where are you going to go? How long are you going to stay? What's the purpose of going there? All this kind of questions. And we get on the train, and there they'd be. There'd be two of them, two plainclothesmen. Traveling with us.
They kept a good eye on you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we come to a defense plant or some scenic spot, they'll come over and pull the shade down right in front of our faces.
Really?
And mother, I'm just going to push it right up. And he'd come and pull it down, up, and the shade would go up and down a couple of times. And they didn't know how to handle a woman that fought back.
Right.
They had absolutely no way of knowing.
Huh.
Because the woman was really second class.
Yeah.
You know, like I told you, my grandma followed me into the kitchen in uncle's house. I just went to the kitchen to get a glass of water. And she followed me in and said, what are you doing in the kitchen? And I just wanted a glass of water. says, if you want water, says, ask for it. A man should never see, be seen in a kitchen.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that great?
That's amazing.
Jeez.
But then when your mother goes back to Japan, she's sort of fighting back in a sense.
She is fighting back. And she didn't want me to get spoiled. She made me wash dishes that night. Yeah. But mother was pretty tough.
Yeah.
So Japan was interesting, man. We even got kicked out of my uncle's house.
Oh, really?
My mother's brother. We're talking about staying in Japan for the rest of the war years. And he's saying, you have to do that because when war starts, we're going to go and grab Philippines and do this and
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
My sister, who's very outspoken, says that you do that, and we'll come over and shoot the island of Japan and sink it. We'll sink the island of Japan. And oh, he couldn't take that. He threw us out of the house that night.
Oh, so it's your uncle who got rid of you?
Huh? Yeah. But we didn't talk politics or whatever. Until it was time for me to go back to the States to go to school, continue school. That was in September of 1941. And I made reservations in a hotel in Tokyo, and then I went to the... went to pick up my ticket. And I said, where have you been? There's no boat between the two countries for a couple of months now.
Mm.
And there was all this war fever. We panicked then because I couldn't get back to the States.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew the editor of Japan Times, George Togasaki. Togasaki is a good family friend of ours in San Francisco. He's a Cal grad, Cal alumni. And he said, if you want to go to get out of the Orient, so the best way is to go to China.
Right.
China's still an open port. And some of the American ships hit China. And you can catch one of those ships back to the States. So we went. But with different kind of passports, my older sister and I was able to get out of Japan very easily. We had American passports. My mother was detained, as well as my kid sister, because of the Japanese passport, and it took time to clear it. But we went to Shanghai, and I stayed about a month there, all of September and October.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to catch a troop ship, a ship back to the States. But the ships were already taken over. The prison liners were taken over by the military.
Mm-hmm.
It was a military troop ship run by U.S. Military. And the private rooms, the rooms were already taken up by business people.
Mm-hmm.
When they pull up and want to return to the States, they get their bookies and get their family on there. The only thing that was open were these big bunks. You slept in kind of a dormitory. I slept in a space where maybe there might have been a dozen GIs, other
mm-hmm.
GIs,
mm-hmm.
And we slept in bunk beds. Three tiers high on both sides, you know, cantilevered. So that would be six beds, maybe you had two of those, and that would be 12 of us in a room. And this GI sleeping above me, I had the lower bunk. I got chewed up by bed bugs, and that was horrible, very itchy. Itchy things. And you you scratch it until it festers, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, this GI was sleeping so soundly that I pulled a dirty. I waited until everybody left the room, and I switched mattresses with him. And all I can say is that guy never snored after that. He had his problems. But it took us 22 days.
22 days.
To come back to the States. Went a very slow, circuitous route. So I got back just a couple of, maybe 10 days before Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
And I forgot about the war when I got back. I came back alone, you know.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, my sister was still, I left her in Shanghai.
And your brother came back alone as well? Or?
Well, they were still in Japan with my mother and my younger sister.
Yeah.
Three of them were still floundering in Japan.
I see.
And I talked to Dad, and Dad says, you better come back because you're going to be in the military, Japanese military, if you're not careful.
Right.
They'll grab you. Although, I had dual citizenship until I went to Japan. I was a citizen of Japan as well as a citizen of the United States. And I dropped my Japanese citizenship before I went to Japan because I was told that they'll grab me and
be
in the military there. So I was just an American citizen. That was a very complicated picture because you go through different channels for different, you know, you're either American citizen or you're American and Japanese, dual citizenship, Japanese citizen. You go through different channels and they have different restrictions. Anyway, I left my sister in Shanghai. She stayed with friends of hers. We had a family friend there.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, my mother and sister, younger sister and brother, got the clearance to come to Shanghai, leave Japan. And they were en route when the Japanese government decided they sent three ships back to the States. First one went to San Francisco, second one to Hawaii, and third one to Vancouver. They were negotiating. They were en route to China when the first ship left.
Oh, really?
And they missed it.
Oh,
and they were still in Shanghai trying to come back when the second one left. And they barely caught the third one.
They
had Vancouver.
So they were on the last ship back?
Last ship back, yeah. So Dad and I drove up all the way to Vancouver and met them and picked them up, and then we came back from there. That was a horrible, horrible year.
Had to be.
But, you know, the funny thing is I came back and I forgot completely about all this.
Really?
Yeah. It didn't dawn on me how precious time was and how little time was left.
Yeah.
I went back to the football games.
Back to life as usual?
Back to life, yeah. Oh. Well, it was easier this time because I'm not enrolled at Cal. I'm just auditing classes, you know.
You're just hanging out.
Yeah, I just told Dad all of that. I should audit classes, I won't be completely out of it. And I stayed at the Japanese Student Club. Japanese students have their own clubhouse.
Because
mm-hmm. They couldn't get into the frat houses.
Right.
So from there I went to the football games and rah-rah until Pearl Harbor came, and that was a complete surprise to me.
Is that right?
Yeah, I should have known that it was coming. That Sunday afternoon was just a fantastic thing. And I didn't know what would happen, but I stayed at the student club that and then in the next following semester. Following semester already in 1942. So we were at war then.
Yeah. What was the immediate reaction to Pearl Harbor among your Japanese student friends?
Well, we didn't think evacuation. They talked about evacuation. We could hear it coming. I didn't think it was possible. I didn't.
Yeah.
How can you get muster all the Japanese in the Bay Area? Well, the West Coast.
Yeah.
West Coast, all of California, all of Oregon and Washington. Clear it out, round them up and put them into camp or do something. We're talking about camps. And they built camps, 10 different camps. In godforsaken areas, good God. Topaz, Utah, Poston, Arizona, Gila River, Arizona, Amachi, where is that, Colorado? But all these strange places, they dug up and had camps. The camp we went to was kind of interesting. It was on the Colorado River, but out in desert country, where the Colorado River flows out between California and Arizona. And we were on the Arizona side. They built this Parker Dam, which was just completed. It's in the Havasu Indian territory, and the idea was to bring water there because the land is very fertile, and to be able to put it to productive use. Well, the idea was to move the Japanese one of the camps there, and they'll work the irrigation system out to the point where it would function,
right.
Which they did.
Yeah.
My dad was kind of in charge of that, working on the dam. And when the time came for him to leave, he didn't want to leave the camp. He was so engrossed in this thing. Mother got after him. And
I'm sure.
Said, God, you got to think about your children. You know, we were just students then.
Right. But to him, this was a pretty amazing project to be working on.
Yeah, sure. He was kind of intrigued.
Yeah.
That's probably my son, huh?
Yeah.